This message comes from NPR sponsor, Mattress Firm. Sleep hot. Mattress Firm's sleep experts can match you with a cooling mattress from the Tempur-Breeze collection from Tempur-Pedic, so you can experience measurably cooler sleep all night. Get matched at Mattress Firm's Memorial Day sale. Sleep at night.
It's just about summer, and we hope that means you're in for a future filled with sunshine, vacations, downtime with friends, and, of course, summer entertainment. I'm Stephen Thompson, and today on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we offer up a guide to some of the most exciting TV, movies, and music you can check out this summer. Joining me are all of my fellow Pop Culture Happy Hour hosts, Aisha Harris. Hey, Aisha.
Pew, 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 pew. We are here.
Glenn Weldon.
Hey, pal.
It's good to have you. Linda Holmes.
Hello, my friends.
Now, right off the bat, we have a major milestone to celebrate. The four of us are sitting in historic Studio 44 at NPR headquarters in D.C. together in person for the very first time.
Uh-huh. Yay! Accurate, yeah. Accurate. We're all just breathing all over each other. I'm just taking this opportunity to, like, every time Stephen breathes out, I breathe in. Give me those droplets, baby. I am happy.
This is unsettling for me. Could we just do this on Zoom as well? Just so it's a little more comfortable.
I've just enjoyed getting to hear Aisha Harris test a microphone for the first time.
Wasn't that fun?
That's right. How are you feeling about this? Do you feel like now you see what you've gotten yourself into now that you're in a room with all of us?
Oh, it feels so good. It feels as though I was always here and never left.
Well, we are here to record our summer guide. Mm-hmm. We've each brought two things to highlight that are hopefully coming up this summer. Obviously, some release dates are bound to be in flux. We made our picks based on the ironclad hope that all of these works will be available sometime between now and the end of summer. Aisha Harris, you are up first. Give us your first pick.
Ooh. So if you know anything about me, and if you have listened to the show long enough, you know how much I am just not into IP. Uh-huh. Too much IP, too much intellectual property. I'm over it. And Barbie, really? Like, we're going to make a movie about Barbie? And yet. Director is Greta Gerwig. She co-wrote it with her partner, Noah Baumbach. And I feel as though I am going to get an IP that is actually really freaking good. Like, Greta Gerwig has the bona fides that I am looking for. She's directed one of my absolute favorite movies of the last few years, and then another movie that I really, really loved and admired, and she put a great spin on it. And that's Lady Bird, which is just such a fantastic film, a coming-of-age story, and Little Women, which, you know, we've seen many, many times on screen and in other adaptations, but she made it different. She made it alive. And so this is why I am so stoked for it. The other reason I'm stoked for it is the fact that this cast is just kind of insane. Margot Robbie as Barbie, Ryan Gosling as Ken, and then there's many other Barbies and many other Kens. Uh-huh. You have Issa Rae, Kate McKinnon, Michael Cera pops up, Will Ferrell. I'm optimistic.
I'm hugely excited about Barbie is not necessarily a phrase I expected to be uttering, but I share your intense love of Lady Bird and Little Women. And I love the fact that every frame that has been released of this movie so far is already a meme.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think that kind of care is being put into it, and I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, and when the trailer came out, there were people saying, I can't understand what's going on in this movie. And clearly what's going on in this movie is there's kids playing with Barbies, and we're seeing what they're creating out of that. That's my prediction, and I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I love the aesthetic of it. Uh-huh. I love the look of it from the trailer. I think that, you know, Greta Gerwig is somebody who certainly knows how to kind of pay attention to every detail. I am a little bit worried about that question of, like, what is it about?
Well, apparently, at least per Variety, this fantasy comedy follows the world's most famous doll who sets off for the human world to find true happiness after being expelled from Barbie Land for being less than perfect.
Okay, well, that's a plot.
All right. Well, that's definitely a plot. Absolutely. I'm excited about this, too. I just want to stare at the clothes all day. I think Ryan Gosling has a wonderful sense of humor about himself, as Margot Robbie does about herself.
He has Kennergy as
well,
he's...
Oh, good Lord.
Okay, for the record, he's the one who said this.
Okay.
I think it's Greta Gerwig. She's not going to make it not about anything. And in the same way that we were worried that the Lego movie was going to just be a Lego ad, but then it was awesome.
Yep.
I am confident that in the hands of Greta Gerwig, this will be too.
Yeah. I think the Lego movie is a great comparison.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
And I hope that's what it turns out to be. Mm-hmm. So that is Barbie. It's out in theaters on July 21st, 2023.
Cannot wait. Linda Holmes, give us your first pick.
Well, I am very excited to be recommending American Born Chinese, which is coming out on Disney Plus on May 24th. This is an 8-episode adaptation of a graphic novel by Jean Luen Yang, and it's about a kid whose life is turned upside down because he becomes friends with a kid who is the son of a god. And they have adventures and there's kung fu and it's all, you know, from everything that I have read, it is full of many wonderful, wonderful things. I am excited to see it. And I mean, I think the first big attention that this adaptation got was this very impressive fact that it reunites not only Michelle Yeoh and Ke Huy Quan from Everything Everywhere All at Once, but also in what I understand to be a guest appearance, Stephanie Hsu.
Yes.
So that's a lot of people from a very recent, very beloved movie to bring together in a new series. I am not always a graphic novel adaptation person just because I'm not necessarily a fantasy kind of world building kind of person. But I'm very excited to see what this is. Are you excited about it?
Tremendously. I love this book and I love this author a great deal. And this is remarkably grounded with a lot of fantasy elements in it. I think you're going to dig it.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's American Born Chinese, out May 24th on Disney Plus.
Yep.
Excellent. Glenn Weldon, give us your first pick.
I'm going to keep the IP train rolling. Blue Beetle is in theaters August 18th. This is a DC superhero movie starring a character with not a lot of name recognition. So
I drove a Blue Beetle.
I once found a Blue Beetle in my blueberry, which
was
terrifying.
I hope you're having fun. look. This could be like the first Shazam movie, or it could be Black Adam, or like the second Shazam movie. It's a crapshoot, by my count. Believe it or not, there have been three superheroes named Blue Beetle in comics over the years, which is odd because it's not a name that strikes terror into the hearts of criminals, unless they're squeamish about bugs. But this is the latest. It was introduced in 2006. It's about a Mexican-American kid named Jaime Reyes. He finds this scarab, which is actually a piece of extraterrestrial military tech that fuses to his spine, and whenever his life is in danger, it gives him this big tactical exoskeleton with all kinds of weapons and powers that he has to learn to control and look. It's not the premise that is getting me excited here, because the premise is basically Venom, right? It's basically also the spider suit that Peter Parker had in the Tom Holland movies, and also some body horror thrown into the mix with the whole fusing to his spine.
The Fly.
Exactly. But the trailer captures a lot of what made this character so good, which is how much he cares about his family. And the family is very central to the trailer. The film is directed by Angel Manuel Soto, who did Charm City Kings, which is a film that came out in 2020. It stars Xolo Marihuana as Jaime, and that kid's been around a lot, Cobra Kai and Parenthood. It was originally intended to be an HBO Max exclusive. Is that a good sign or a bad sign?
The fact that they're putting it out in theaters would seem like a good sign. The fact that they're putting it out in theaters August 18th?
Yeah, we'll see.
Sometimes that's a dumping ground.
I mean, what happened was this whole notion of we'll do HBO Max exclusive DC movies kind of got scuttled.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so this is in that mix. Who knows?
My only question is this. Based on my prior experience with Blue Beetles, Have large parts of him been sprayed with red Rust-Oleum?
Okay. Mm. All right. Have your fun, you people.
Was John Lennon a Blue Beetle? He seemed blue a lot.
Oh, my God. Coming from the makers of Blue Beetle, Punch Buggy.
Now that is a movie that I would watch. Can you imagine?
All right, so that is Blue Beetle in theaters August 18th. Well, I am going to keep the IP train rolling.
Chugga-chugga-chugga-chugga-chugga-chugga-chugga
for one more pick. There are several different ways to smash a bunch of intellectual property together and call it a movie. You can do it the Space Jam Legacy way, the Super Mario Brothers movie way, where you just kind of throw a bunch of references on the screen, and that's good enough to make the Super Mario Brothers movie $1 billion, or you can do it the Who Framed Roger Rabbit way. You can do it the Lego Movie way, as we discussed in the earlier segment. We can do it the Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves way. Sure. We can do it the Chip 'n Dale Rescue Rangers way. And we can do it the Into the Spider-Verse
way. There we go.
Yes.
Now, Into the Spider-Verse may be the best Spider-Man movie.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah, I would agree.
And 3 years before Spider-Man No Way Home brought a whole bunch of different Spider-Men together, Into the Spider-Verse did more or less the same thing, but including things like Peter Porker.
Exactly.
Spider-Man.
And did so in an enormously inventive, funny, creatively animated way. Like, you could watch that movie and squint at some of the choices made in the way they animated it. Things like the noir Spider-Man is not only black and white, but he's in stipple.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think is so funny and clever and thoughtful. Everything is putting more thought into it than it probably needed, but in the best possible way. Agreed. Well, on June 2nd, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, a sequel to Into the Spider-Verse, is coming out, and I am extraordinarily excited about it. The plan, apparently, is to visit these different Spider-Man alternate universes, which my history with Marvel's multiverse stuff tends to consist of me sitting there with my arms folded trying to figure out who's with what.
Sure.
But I trust these people. I trust Phil Lord, Chris Miller, David Callahan to do this in a way that I will be able to follow and that I will delight in as much as I delighted in Into the Spider-Verse, which is just so fantastic.
Yeah, and the trailer features a giant kind of multiverse of spider beings. And yet, the first trailer that was released, I think, was really focusing on him on a rooftop.
On Miles Morales.
Yeah, on Miles Morales on a rooftop talking to his mom, like, you're growing up. And, like, that's the thing, right? That heart is what separates Spider-Man from a lot of other characters. And so, I'm in. Fully in.
Me too. And I don't even care about superheroes, generally speaking. But you're right. Into the Spider-Verse was so good. And I'm excited.
So that is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse out in theaters June 2nd. I am so excited. Aisha Harris, give us your second pick.
Well, fare thee well, IP land. We're leaving it. Finally. So yeah, my next pick is I'm a Virgo. It was created by Boots Riley, and he's a co-showrunner with Zee Chun. And I have four words for why I am so excited about this. Sorry to bother you. That was Boots Riley's debut feature. It came out a few years ago, starred Lakeith Stanfield, and it actually made our Black film canon. It's, to me, one of the best films of the last decade or so. And I'm really excited for this because he is such a visual and weird filmmaker where you don't know where he is going to be going with whatever the story that he's telling you. And this one seems just as weird and just as interesting. So this is a series and it's coming on Prime Video. It stars Gerald Jerome, who plays Cootie, who is a 13-foot tall Black man who goes on adventures because, per the trailer, he's a Virgo and Virgos love adventure. So Gerald Jerome is one of the more interesting actors we've had over the last few years. He won an Emmy for Ava DuVernay's When They See Us, where he starred as Corey Wise, one of the exonerated five in the Central Park jogger case, and he was fantastic. But most viewers probably recognize him from one of his earlier roles, which is playing Kevin in Moonlight, a teenage Kevin in Moonlight. And so to see him get a role like this, to be working with Boots Riley, I'm just really excited to see what happens. There's, like, not a lot of plot that's been revealed yet, although it has screened at a couple of different festivals. But it sounds like his family is attempting to shield him from the world out of fear of how it will treat him. But he, like, kind of breaks out and he discovers, you know, classic sort of fairy tale coming of age kind of story. It actually kind of reminds me of Frozen, where they're like, hide your, you know, weird quirk.
Exactly.
And it also features Mike Epps, Carmen Ejogo, and Walton Goggins. So I'm very excited for this. So that's I'm a Virgo. It's streaming on Amazon Prime Video later this summer. And we should also just note that Amazon supports NPR and pays to distribute some of our content.
All right, Glenn, hit us with your second pick.
We're back in IP, but it's public domain IP. The Last Voyage of the Demeter is a horror film coming out in theaters August 11th. More specifically, it is a Dracula film, but it is a Dracula film that I know for a fact was sold in the room because the pitch of this thing is so good. It's such a smart way to take a property that has been done to death, undone to undeath, and find a new way into it. You carve off just a sliver of the story, right? So that's the same way that biopics work best when it's like an event or a day in the life. It's as opposed to doing the trying to dramatize the Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
So Dracula by Bram Stoker is an epistolary novel, which means it is composed of letters and diary entries. One chapter is called The Captain's Log, and it's exactly that. The Demeter is this Russian shipping vessel that Count Dracula hires to take a bunch of boxes from Transylvania to England. And it turns out, unbeknownst to the captain and crew of the Demeter, that those boxes contain the coffin of Dracula that he's sleeping in and a bunch of earth from his native country for vampire reasons. So as this chapter unfolds, the captain keeps account of what's happening and, you know, it's sailing across the way and his crew is getting picked off one by one. It is my favorite chapter of the book because the problem with epistolary novels and with Dracula is that it's somebody's writing a letter about this horrible thing they experienced. You kind of know they survived the horrible thing they experienced. This is a captain's log that just ends abruptly when the ship washes ashore in England. To make a movie out of that means we're going to get shipboard claustrophobic mystery. It is directed by the Norwegian director André Øvredal, who directed a film I liked back in 2010 called Troll Hunter. It stars Corey Hawkins, who's having a moment.
Yeah.
He played Dre in Straight Outta Compton. He's great. It also stars Liam Cunningham, who is the Onion Knight from Game of Thrones. Haven't seen him in a while. It'll be good to have him back. And from the trailer, the design of Dracula is going to be more inhuman Nosferatu as opposed to the kind of high-cheekboned, Byronic hero, you know, Frank Langella kind. I like a creepy Drac more than a hot Drac.
I agree.
I also like that this is Drac where he doesn't have to pretend to be, you know, aristocracy to impress the English people. He can just be himself. He doesn't have to code switch. He can just be a creepy Drac. He just can be a monster. I really like this approach. I'm looking forward to this a lot. That is The Last Voyage of the Demeter in theaters August 11th.
Wonderful. Thank you, Glenn Weldon. This next pick from Linda is of tremendous interest in my household. Take us away.
All right. Well, so I am picking the film adaptation of Casey McQuiston's Red, White, and Royal Blue, a novel that came out in 2019 about a romance between the son of the American president, who is a woman from Texas, and a British prince. It's your basic, like, your romance people would call this enemies to lovers. These guys meet at an event and they get into a thing and they don't like each other. And they're sort of told you have to promote international diplomacy by like seeming like you like each other. And gradually they fall in love. And I think Casey got a lot of attention for this book, partly because it was such a beloved queer romance at a time when, you know, people were so interested in all of the queer romance writing that was coming out. But it's also like in a lot of ways a very kind of classic romance setup. I mean, writing about princes, writing about, you know, people who hate each other and then they're sort of forced to essentially make nice with each other. And like there's also because they are from different parts of the world, there's a lot of longing and there's a lot of letter writing, at least in the book. And it's just very like it's somehow like both hot and innocent in a certain way. The movie is being directed and was written in part by Matthew Lopez, who is a playwright who did The Inheritance. And I think it's so interesting that they went in that direction with the person to make this film. And I'm really, really interested to see how it turns out. This is a book that is very precious to me. It's just a book that's very closely held by the people who love it. But I'm very excited that they're doing it. It is coming to Prime Video on August 11th. I'm going to check it out. I think it's going to be beautiful people in a lovely romance. And I can't wait. I can't wait.
Uh-huh. Tell me if it's hot and then I will decide. watch it.
I mean, it's a hot, it's a very hot book.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Linda Holmes. I'm going to take us out with a music pick. Some of my favorite summer music of the last 10 or 15 years has been by Kesha, who's brought the world TikTok. She's brought the world Raising Hell. She's brought the world woman. So many just like fun, vibrant, silly. She kind of specializes in like fine line between stupid and clever in her approach, but is very, very smart about the way she approaches it. I'm interested in wherever she's willing to take us. And she's got an album coming out on May 19th called Gag Order. And it promises to take a hard left turn. As many people know, Kesha, for the last 8 or 9 years, has been locked in legal battles with the producer, Dr. Luke. She's accused him of sexual assault and battery, as well as other offenses. He has countersued. That dispute is still, to this day, playing out in the courts. She has sought to be released from her contract with his label imprint, but she hasn't been able to do that. So the title Gag Order certainly suggests a certain amount of subtext. And what has me so intrigued about this album, besides the fact that I've basically loved everything Kesha's ever done, is these first couple of singles that they've dropped, which suggest a really a, like a dark left turn. They're very haunting, very spare, but with real anger in them. And she's talked in interviews about wanting this album to be a vehicle for her to explore the ugly underside of her emotions. So I'm very curious about it. I don't know if it's going to be a summer like beach record, but I loved Praying, which was a kind of a left turn for her. And I expect to love this record too. Let's hear a little bit of the song Eat the Acid.
You said don't ever eat the acid if you don't want to be changed like it changed me. You said all the edges got so jagged, now everything you saw then can't be unseen. You said that the universe is magic, just open up your eyes, the signs are waiting.
So Kesha, produced by Rick Rubin, is a very, very intriguing development that I'm very excited about.
It's still like dance music. It's still party music. It's just angry party. I'm here for an angry party.
Yep, me too. I like it.
Yeah.
My life has been an angry party for so long.
I'm just really happy she's, I mean, granted under not great circumstances, but I'm glad she's still able to make music because there have been plenty of people in the industry who have had their careers completely sidelined because of alleged abuse. So it's nice that she's at least able to do the sort of subtweeting album. Yeah, that's a good pick. I'm excited to check it out.
I am really excited about this one too. That's Gag Order from Kesha. That's out May 19th. We want to know what you are looking forward to watching, reading, listening to this summer. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. Up next, what is making us happy this week?
I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. Across the NPR network, we report rigorously on the forces seeking to disrupt democracy and provide communities with reliable information. It's Public Media Giving Days, the perfect time to stand with the facts by donating now at donate.npr.org. Thank you.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
Is it possible to engineer our way out of the climate crisis? Some entrepreneurs want to shoot particles into the stratosphere to combat global warming. Experts say regulations on this technology aren't keeping up. The world of solar geoengineering on the latest episode of The Sunday Story from NPR's Up First podcast.
The day's top headlines, local stories from your community, your next podcast binge listen. You can have it all in one place, your pocket. Download the NPR app today.
Why is everyone so obsessed with traditional wives or trad wives on social media? This week, we're talking about the viral videos of women making marshmallows and mozzarella from scratch, and how behind the sheen of calm kitchens and cute fits, there's some interesting pessimism about our modern world. And that's worth digging into. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Now it's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Aisha Harris, what's making you happy this week, buddy?
What is one thing we all really want to avoid ever having to do, but we still have to do it anyway? Jury duty.
Oh, yeah.
But
where this is going.
One thing that we should not avoid, also jury duty, but it is Jury Duty, the TV series on Amazon Freevee. Now,
Freevee.
Explain Freevee to me.
I think it's kind of like Tubi, but on Amazon. So shows and movies, but there are ads involved, basically. So Jury Duty is a reality TV series. We have a man named Ronald Gladden, who is juror number 6, participating in a trial that is just the most bizarre trial. I won't even try to explain what is happening here. But he is the only person in this entire setup who does not realize this is all fake. Everyone around him are actors, improvisational actors, comedic actors, character actors you might be familiar with from various other shows. And then there's also James Marsden, who is playing himself. And what I love about the show is that, A, even though he is not in on the joke, the show never punches down. It doesn't really make him the butt of the joke. Yep. He's just reacting to all of the bizarre things that are happening, including in one episode, they go on a field trip at Margaritaville. And they have lots of drinks. And at the end of the night, the bill is stupid high. And while Marsden is in the bathroom, everyone else agrees to ask him to pick up the tab because he is the rich, famous person.
All right, tell you what. I'll pick up this bill. If someone beats me in arm wrestling. What do you think about that?
What? For real?
Yeah. What?
It turns into just this weird, chaotic moment. What I love about the show also is just the way that all of the other actors are able to really play off of him. And the show ends on a happy note. He is a very game person, even though he has no idea what's happening. And he has just like an affable quality to him. So that is Jury Duty. It is on Amazon Freevee. And it is absolutely worth checking out. The whole series is now available to stream.
Now, I should state NPR's official policy that jury duty is a tremendous civic responsibility and that no one should try to get out of it.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Aisha Harris. Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
The Other Two is back,
yes,
baby.
Yes, woo! Yes.
Season 3 is streaming on HBO Max and hasn't missed a beat. This show is a PCHH favorite. It stars Drew Tarver and Helena York as two entertainment industry strivers who keep getting overshadowed by their younger brother. In season 3, they finally achieved some success, and it is screwing them up in entirely new ways, which is a lot of fun. The first two seasons were about how desperately seeking fame and fortune causes you to do a lot of very humiliating things. This season is about how trying to cling to success and always seeking more and more acclaim and support can turn you into a monster. It is by far the darkest season yet, and it leans hard into the surreal in a lot of very fun ways, but it knows exactly what it's doing from the jump, and it's got such great jokes. And in the 7 episodes made available to the press, it's still got that heart that makes all that darkness kind of go down easy. The Other Two, season 3 on HBO Max.
Yeah.
I love this show.
It's so good.
So, so good. Much. Thank you, Glenn. Linda Holmes, what's making you happy this week?
Well, I went back and forth about a number of things, but boy, do I love a good bit of nerd content that brings out the nerd in me and in others. I have been very much enjoying a well-known, I am far, far from the discoverer of this, very well-known and well-thought-of YouTube series called Every Frame a Painting, which is about filmmaking, and it's about form, and it's sort of about how things are shot. Each little video essay has a particular like topic that it covers. These are mostly several years old, and I am the kind of person where what I relate to the most in movies and TV tends to be the writing. So it is always good for me to kind of continually spark myself to focus more on form, because I don't always, because of my fascination with writing. So I always appreciate good opportunities to sort of get a basic grounding in technique and stuff like that. Even if I've heard a lot of this stuff before, putting it back in my head is always good for me, and I really appreciate it. So this is the video essay series, Every Frame a Painting, which you can find on YouTube, and that is what is making me extremely happy this week.
Wonderful. Thank you, Linda Holmes. Speaking of things that have been around for a couple of years, and speaking of wonderful television that I've been watching in the run-up to a new season of the other two, kind of to fill the yawning gap in my life, I finally caught up with Rutherford Falls.
Oh, sure.
On Peacock. Just immediately mainlined all 18 episodes. Sadly, the only 18 episodes that will exist of this really lovely show. For those who don't know, it's set in a fictional small town in New York. It stars Ed Helms and Jana Schmieding. It kind of captures the divide in this town between the white descendants of the founders of the town and the native population, including the casino run by the wonderful Michael Gray Eyes, who is so great on this show. I think it takes a little while to get its feet under it. I think it takes a while for it to get as funny as it needs to be, but it is such a charming show filled with charming performances, actors I will be looking for in other projects. Ed Helms is always his marvelous, goofy self. And I really, really got a kick out of this show. And I do highly recommend it if you didn't get a chance to kind of catch it when people were talking about it. So that is what is making me happy this week. That brings us to the end of our show. Aisha Harris, Glenn Weldon, Linda Holmes, thanks so much for being here all in the same room.
Yay!
Oh, you knuckleheads. We want to take a moment to thank our Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus subscribers. We appreciate you so much for showing your support of NPR. If you haven't signed up yet, want to show your support, and listen to the show without any sponsor breaks, head over to plus.npr.org/happyhour or visit the link in our show notes. This episode was produced by Mike Katzeff and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello, Come In provides our theme music. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Stephen Thompson, and we will see you all next week.
Non-NPR Plus people stuck with the freebie version.
Freebie!
Hey, I hear you have a birthday coming up. Yeah, you. If you're listening to this, that means you have a birthday coming up eventually. And here at Life Kit, we want it to be a special one.
Magic can happen and good luck can happen and serendipity can happen if we're open to it.
How to have a good birthday, even if you're not a birthday person. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR. Okay, close your eyes for a second. Now imagine you're on your dream vacation. No work calls to answer, no text messages to respond to, just your suitcase and an opportunity.
The opportunity to just take yourself out of your routine and travel deeper.
How to actually take that dream trip. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.
Do you ever wish you could get your stories in 3 hours rather than 3 minutes? Or maybe you're sick of doom scrolling, getting your news in bits and pieces. That is where Embedded comes in. We bring you documentary series that will change the way you think about things. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.